But they will not pull the trigger on any, like, real sex jokes or anything. Like, it is so simultaneous. It's so toothless, and it just makes it fall flat so often.
I'm going through my notes, and I regret to inform you that there are two important things that we forgot to go over, so we'll try to at least hit them.
Okay, okay. So we forgot
the college. The college music number, where they really go after just higher education in general.
Colleges,
they're just like,
yeah.
They're just like, dude, higher education sucks. All these people are a bunch of hippies smoking weed. Yep. My note says, I don't know how I keep forgetting that conservatives hate college and weed. And then they follow that up with, again, one of the times I have to give it credit. This is one of my first, I think, of these that I actually had written down was this radical Christian segment was dangerous.
Oh, the radical, yes. Oh, thank you.
Radical Christian segment, like, they SNL'd it. They just did too much. If they had gotten 40, like a tight 45, maybe 60 seconds worth of radical Christian in there, it actually could have been a pretty funny joke. But they fudged the bucket by belaboring the point so hard.
The radical Christian is the only time, the radical Christians is the only time this movie, like, even got, like, a chortle out of me. When the nun runs on and blows up the bus, I was just like, okay, that's kind
of
funny.
Or when the dude busts into the cockpit of the airplane with the stick, and then with the flick of the wrist, it turns into a cross. They're just radiating like an actual holy power. I was like, what the fuck? Again, like, you know, in the hands of someone better, like, if Tim and Eric are doing the radical Christian sketch back then, when they were in their prime, like, that's actually probably pretty funny. But in this movie, it's a fucking disaster.
Okay, so we got to, you know why it's so easy to forget the college scene? Because it's a complete non sequitur.
Yeah, and because the framework of the movie is nonsensical. Because, again, Patton is supposed to be there and fuck off. That's a job.
Yeah.
But Patton just, like, keeps bringing him to different, he's like, God, come on, let's go to a different place. It's like,
he's supposed to be the past. He's supposed to be the past. Tell me, okay, pop quiz to both of you. Who is the spirit of July 4th present?
It was either George Washington or Tim McGraw or whoever it was, that guy.
Okay.
The country guy is death. He's the ghost of America future or whatever, you know.
But like, he has the least amount of screen time, which is consistent with A Christmas Carol.
I think it's supposed to be Bill O'Reilly. I think the joke is that Bill O'Reilly was supposed to be...
George Washington, is he the past?
Well, Bill O'Reilly is the one, like, the three of them confront him simultaneously in the porta potty, and they make a joke.
JFK, though. JFK comes back.
Yeah, he's Bob Marley or whatever. Who's the guy with the chains? It's been a while, but, like, he's the secret fourth ghost in the movie. But, like, those four are the ghosts in A Christmas Carol.
I was like, the mental notes are stacking.
But then, like, George Washington shows up. And
so he's got to be the past, right?
There. I think he's just, like, a freebie.
the thing that happened to both Patton and to JFK is they both deal with Michael Moore for a little while, and then they're like, this guy's fucking irredeemable. What a piece of shit he is. And when Patton has his mental breakdown that he can't reach Michael Moore, he can't get him to see the error of his ways, that's when he turns to George
Rosie
Washington.
O'Connell was not enough.
Yeah, because Rosie O'Connell wasn't enough, yeah.
Okay, so maybe this is how it breaks down. So, JFK is Bob Marley. Whatever that guy's name is, I keep getting it twisted up in my head. The original ghost in the stick. Then our Ghost of America Past is Patton, aka Frasier. Mm-hmm. Our Ghost of Christmas Present is O'Reilly,
I guess.
Our Ghost of America Future is George Washington, and then the country guy is just there to embody death, not a ghost of Christmas, whatever. Just the embodiment of death. Because that is, like, that is, you know, chronologically how they appear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, oh my God. Okay. So, anyone listening to this, it sounds like we're bouncing around. It's hard to follow. Don't watch the movie. It's this hard to follow because they have no internal logic. Michael Moore character calls out Patton's Christmas America ghost powers and tells him to use them. And it's so frustrating.
First, Patton's like, fuck yeah, I'll use those powers. Let's go talk some shit about the ACLU. You guys remember that scene?
Yeah. Before the ACLU scene, though, we get a jump cut back to the Muslim terrorists.
Oh,
and when that happens, I'm like, I completely forgot that was even a part of the movie. Oh, we're going back to the Muslim
terrorists. Yeah, they need a director, Mike.
Yeah.
A director for their new... Okay. When we meet our terrorist characters, they need a new recruitment film from a real director because they can't recruit enough suicide bombers because all the good ones are dead. But oh my god.
And then by the end of the movie, they have just audibled into, hey, we're just going to do a terror attack. Like a regular
terror attack.
We're just gonna blow people up with a bomb. And it's just like, okay, that's some slick filmmaking there, brother.
Right. Originally, they needed Michael Moore because they needed him to direct terrorist recruitment videos. Then they needed Michael Moore so they could get media passes so they could slink through Madison Square Garden and plant bombs undetected. And so basically, the justification for why they're shoehorning this plot line in and it needs Michael Moore just changes as they were rewriting the script as they went along. So, I mean, that's basically it. Like,
if it sounds like it's fucking hard to follow, it's because it's fucking hard to follow.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, if we're jumping around, it's because the movie jumps around.
Okay, back to the ACLU scene. Yeah. The ACLU are zombies. And the stuff that they're about seems pretty reasonable. They're zombies that are trying to prevent illegal search and seizures and trying to have the Ten Commandments up in American courthouses.
Did you catch on all the ACLU's papers? They had the Star of David.
I did not.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great.
But my note says, super fun that the anti-ACLU scene can't come up with an unreasonable thing for them to do.
It was Dennis Hopper, because he's a right-wing nut. He's the judge in the courtroom for the ACLU scene, and he's bitching about how they won't let us wiretap the terrorists so we can find out what they're doing. Like, he's basically bitching about civil liberties and pissing.
Isn't it great to shoot people to death?
Yes.
He literally says the first one's always the hardest.
Yeah.
He says the first one's the best.
Yeah.
And the thing was, is the moment they had Michael Moore with the gun and he's like spraying bullets, I'm like, he is going to accidentally kill someone and Dennis Hopper is going to give him a big bro fist and then he's going to get into it. I just saw that whole quote unquote character development coming from a mile away. And the other thing that asking this movie to ever have consistency is obviously stupid, but the ACLU were quote unquote zombies, yet you didn't have to headshot them. It was just any gunshot to their body killed them, even though they were a zombie. And they were having massive blood spatter when they were hit. So it's like,
Also, for the benefit of the listener who is not watching this horrible movie and is for whatever reason just listening to the podcast, this scene is Patton and our boy and a judge and like a billion ACLU guys and a bunch of like Patton brought like a whole arm, like a platoon worth of soldiers with him.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, the middle of this movie is just like a small zombie shoot 'em up with
and they're there. It seems like jokes. It's really happening. Like,
yeah, right. It sure does.
The zombies are real.
Out into the street and stuff. They start on the street and walk into the courthouse because they see the zombies going there. Fucking bizarre, man. Anyway,
right.
We got to move on. Then Patton brings him to the 4th of July barbecue where his brother, or his, not his brother, his nephew is. And they're back to being like invisible and intangible or whatever.
We jump past when he takes him to Kandahar. He takes him to, no, does Trace Atkins take him? Fuck. All right. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
We'll get to the Kandahar prayer scenes, I'm sure, sooner or later.
There's no getting around it. I thought that this was the next thing. This is the next note I had. It's one of the other ones where I have to give it credit. Little Timmy gag, also dangerously close to being funny. Thank God then the writing happened. Again, so the movie being what it is, it's obviously, it takes place in modern day and then at the very least like 1940 or whatever, aside from our quick sojourn to plantation times.
There were two quick things. One, they took a random shot at Scientology, which good on you, fuck Scientology.
Yeah.
And then this, they did the transition, I think, from this, like, from the ACLU zombie fight to the cookout. And Kelsey Grammer, like, stares at the camera melancholy for, like, 20 seconds. It's, like, really jarring thing where, like, Michael Moore's like, I'm leaving now. And Kelsey Grammer's like, that's fine. And then he just, like, hard turns to the camera and just stares at it with, like, a kind of, like, forlorn expression on his face. And they just lock in on him and really, really let you drink that in, the pathos of General Patton.
As listeners, if you were wondering, is the editing in this movie good? No, it's not. It's really bad. It's really, really fucking bad. If there's a scene that needs a little more time, they cut it short. If there's a scene that they should, if there's a moment they should cut, they let it run.
like the little Timmy gag that I kind of like. Because little Timmy comes up and he's just like, you know, they've mentioned him again.
Tiny Tim, yeah.
Tiny Tim. And but when he comes hobbling on, he's got like the old school wooden crutch. Yeah.
It's
like straight out of like the fucking, like, you know, 1860 or whatever. Yeah. It's just like, oh, okay, that gag could be pretty funny. But then he opens his mouth. And the writing just can't help itself. And then they're just like, here's cockeyed blind Betty or whatever. And here's dialysis Dennis or whatever. And not only is that hacky, but all of these kids are foul-mouthed gold diggers. They're all just like, where's our useless, stupid uncle who we hate and is worthless? And all of the money that he promised us that we believed he could get because he owes us a fantastic amount of money to cure all of our ailments because reasons.
This really bothered me because this joke is terrible for a million reasons. Their father is actively in the Navy. All of them have TRICARE, some of the best health insurance. And it would cover everything. This doesn't make any sense. Like, logically. And the joke goes on too long, and they just beat you over the head with it because they want to be Airplane so bad. They just like, hey, remember Airplane?
But yeah, they just can't help themselves. They were so close to having a good joke, they just needed to pull out. Instead, they just belabor it over and over and over again.
And it's like, oh, we can't get any of this. We can't afford this. And I'm like, you're in a very large house, and you're active duty Navy. You're about to deploy. I think you're active duty. You haven't said your reserves. So
then we get a scene that I almost forgot about, despite the fact that my notes say it has maybe my favorite joke in the whole thing. Then we get to the alternate present/future of Taliban Hollywood.
Oh my God.
My note says, honestly, maybe my favorite joke. Terrorist guys or whatever, like, Kelsey Grammer's walking down the street, they're like terrorist stuff all over the place, everything looks like it's all Taliban. And, they just say, yeah, they kept all the buildings, they just changed all the signs. And I was like, okay, that's like a pretty funny meta joke about how cheap this scene is, cause it's literally just them walking like down fucking downtown LA or whatever, and they've digitally removed all the regular signs and replaced them with like fucking, you know,
Victoria's Burka.
Yeah, exactly. Dumb shit like that. And I was just like, okay, you made a halfway decent meta joke at your own expense. Good for you guys. But again, like, they're just like, oh yeah, like, oh, this is what happens to Hollywood when Al-Qaeda takes over. So of course, then the camera pans to the Hollywood side and it says Allahu Akbar land or something. It's so dumb.
Oh, and then to your point, the movie hates documentarians, but in this future where the Taliban has won, and like conquered America, they have a giant statue for Michael Malone up because of his amazing documentaries. Yeah,
his work for bringing jihad to America.
Yeah.
He helped break the American spirit to allow Islam to conquer it.
Yeah, this is where the quote that I was writing about earlier came from. The actual quote I wrote down was, this movie posits that the documentaries are simultaneously worthless and responsible for both 9/11 and the Holocaust. So that's pretty fun.
Yes, exactly.
I don't even remember what this is in regards to, but I wrote down 2008 conservative propaganda movie still manages to succeed where modern conservatives fail, : condemning Nazis. Apparently, they must have taken a shot at some Nazis here.
I mean, I guess, I think they keep comparing liberals to Nazis, but I know the moment you're talking about, and there's just so many, like, strays where they accidentally make a point.
It's just like as he's starting to learn his lesson, he finds out that his stupid documentary causes 9/11 or whatever, like causes the fucking Al-Qaeda to take over the country. He's learning his lesson. And then he finally gets like shaken out of his bullshit and he's just like, what day is it? I need to go get the Christmas turkey. But in this case, they've set up this stupid plot line about all the shit going on. So what he has to do is he has to go give this big speech where he's going to condemn America and say how he hates America. And this is where we get him looking down the barrel of the lens of the camera and telling us point blank what the lesson he has learned is. In a quote that I wrote down, these terrorists are trying to kill us all. That is his come to Jesus moment. That is him getting on stage and just being like, everybody cut all the bullshit that I was talking about before. I am about to reveal that I love Christmas. But this movie's Loves Christmas is, quote, these terrorists are trying to kill us all.
Yeah, yeah. And then he gets